God is everywhere. Where can you go to find him? She knew just where to go. The temple was their special place, not just for her, not just for her little family, but for the family that was the people of God going all the way back. She knew all the stories, the ones going all the way back to the beginning. She had told them over and over again to her little son at bedtime, trying in vain to get him to go to sleep. If she finished one story, he would just cry out, "Again, again!" So she told them again. Knowing that he would be a priest one day like his father, he needed to know the story going all the way back. She told him how in the beginning, God made a beautiful garden, how God had always meant to dwell with his people, and that while many religions had temples, buildings of worship where they placed little statues inside, an image of their God, this God had placed his holy image inside this garden, this temple garden, a place where he would rule and rest. But here, the image of God was living and breathing in humanity. She told him how when humans rejected God's plan and everything went wrong, God didn't reject them. He kept finding places where he could show up, move in, dwell among them. The story of their people's enslavement and escape from Egypt were the parts that her little boy loved most of all. All those gross plagues, the awesome miracles, again, again, he would say. And then, once God's people were on the move through the wilderness all those years, it turned out that God was on the move too, dwelling with them even there. He tabernacled in a tent of meeting, and that's where they could count on his presence, right there among them. Even in the wilderness, God had a front door. And then finally, the story of their glorious temple itself, not just beautiful because of its architecture, but because of the beauty of God's holiness dwelling right there among his people. Their family, they were from the tribe of Levi, so the temple was like home to them, really, this family of priests. Her husband was one of so many coming home each night, bloodstained with the sacrifices of the people, but also filled with stories of encounters of the living God. Stories of healings, restoration, sins washed away with the blood of sacrifice. These priests, they went back again day after day. They were giving their whole lives. They gave themselves away, almost like a living sacrifice. She stood at the door each morning and watched him leave. She was at the door when he came home late. She washed the blood again and again from those priestly garments, the stains he brought home. She mended the holes in his holy clothes and listened to the stories he told. He had all kinds of stories too, not just the ones about the beauty of worship, the privilege of declaring the leper clean, the joy of watching those who came with burdens have their burdens lifted, but stories of other kinds of stains too. The sins among the holy men themselves, the priests, joined by the Sanhedrin, there to make judgment, the Pharisees with their rules about how to keep the rules, about how to keep the rules. There were good men, of course, but corruption and sin sometimes walked around in priestly garments or held haughty judgment or a condemning air. There was always the jockeying for power, the attempts to step on one another's backs on the way to the top. Just because God was perfect didn't mean that the people who worked for him were. One year, her husband came home excited to tell her that he had been chosen that day to hold the rope, on that one day of the year when the high priest went in alone to the Holy of Holies, past the curtain, into the place where only one went, only once a year. This high priest acted proud and unafraid, but her husband said he felt two things standing outside that curtain holding the rope. First, he felt it. He felt the weight of glory pressing in around him. And He felt the rope trembling. That rope that he was supposed to use to pull the high priest out should he drop dead in his tracks from encountering the concentrated presence of God. She and the other priests' wives used to gather in the mornings after their husbands left for the temple at daybreak, another day of holy work ahead. They would laugh, these wives. They would laugh and talk and share tea and share stories about the bloodstains they washed out of the garments night after night and the burdens they lifted when they heard their husbands' stories of hardship. And they would wonder aloud, who are the real priests anyway? If the stains and the burdens come home and we are the ones to lift them, aren't we priests as well? Those were golden years, sweet years. She remembered them now with a kind of sad reverie at the memory of her husband coming and going each day, at the memory of the image of their little boy growing, the image of his father, a little priest in the making. And then came the year of sickness that swept through their community like a flood. Grave illness and death that touched almost every house, even the priest's homes were not exempt. Even her own family was not spared. And when the flood of sickness subsided, both her husband and her little boy were gone, taking with them all the hopes of future generations of priests from their lineage, all of her hopes of anything, leaving her alone, arms and home empty, widowed, and wondering, where was their God? If God is everywhere, where can you go to find him? She went back to the one place she knew to find him, to God's front door. She went back to the temple, this time as a widow in need of the charity that others would give. The other priests, they were kind. They gave her holy garments in need of washing and mending, altar cloths and albs, torn holy garments full of holes. She mended and mended, and something in that work helped mend something in her as well. She sold food to the crowds of pilgrims who came during the holy days, those who ascended the holy hill singing the familiar psalms of ascent, those who came looking for God, wanting to meet with God, wanting something that they expected God could bring them there. And one year she noticed a curious sight among the pilgrims. A boy. He couldn't have been more than 12. That wasn't unusual, but what was strange is that he was surrounded by the teachers of the law. They were following him around like puppies, all these grown men, revered for their wisdom. And the more questions he asked and the more they answered, the more she could tell that his questions were themselves wiser than any answer that they gave. That night, she left the temple late and was startled to come across the boy alone, asleep in the temple. His family must have left, but he didn't seem out of place here. He seemed at home, at peace. Something about his demeanor just seemed to match the tone of the place. She scurried home and back and brought one of her son's old cloaks, draped it over him as he slept. The next day she smiled as she saw an eager mother rush past her at daybreak, a pilgrim returning to the temple, calling the name of her lost son again and again. Only she didn't think he was lost at all. Years later, many years, she heard that name again. She heard stories that he was traveling the countryside, drawing great crowds. These were unbelievable stories, stories of healings, of miracles, beautiful stories that he told that were traded from one pair of ears to the next until they reached hers. She puzzled over his stories. And one day she turned a corner in the courts of the temple again, and there he was, the boy turned man, surrounded once again by a group of men, only this time they were asking him questions. He was the one answering, still though, with that same gentle, humble air. It was on a day when offerings were customarily brought in the temple, and She so wanted to give her best to God. She wanted to give something to this place that had been home and healing for her, but she had so little, almost nothing, really. She felt down for the last 2 coins making music in her pocket when she walked. When she thought no one was looking, she snuck up to the place of offering. She dropped those 2 tiny coins, the last she had, into the treasury box, so large, so full that her coins didn't even make a sound when they hit. She thought no one saw her. But when she turned to go, he caught her eye. Turns out that he saw her. She heard him say a few words to her, his followers, as she scurried away. She has given far more than all the others. Because instead of giving a little out of her much, she gave all out of her little. There was something about him, something that seemed to radiate hope and health and peace, something that reminded her almost of entering the temple itself, of how much she loved that sacred space. She wasn't the only one who was reminded of the temple when she thought of him. People were saying things. They were saying that he was claiming to do things that only the temple was supposed to do. She heard that he had said more than once, get this, your sins are forgiven. And that was temple business. And how could any forgiveness happen without sacrifice anyway? She heard that he was healing people, even on the Sabbath, when healing was something that was confirmed by priests in the temple courts alone. She even heard that he said something crazy, almost too hard to believe, that if you could tear down this temple, this huge structure, the thing that had taken generations to build, that if you could tear this temple down, he could build it again in just 3 days. And it made her think maybe he wasn't talking about a building at all. The more these stories poured in, the angrier the temple leaders became, and the more worried she became about him, protective of him, really. All these proud religious leaders, they whispered their hostility pretty loudly. She heard their curiosity turn to contempt, and their contempt turn to conspiracy. All these power groups, normally working against each other, were uniting to turn against him. She could see that no good end would come of this. Sure enough, word reached her that he had been arrested, that there was to be a trial. There came a day where she heard the cry of crowds as they pushed him out of the city gates, up a hill to the place they executed criminals. She knew right where she had to go, the only place she could go to pray. She went to God's front door. She ran to the temple, to the place that brought her peace, to the place she knew she could seek God's presence. It was there when she was praying that she heard a rumbling sound. She thought at first she was going blind, but when she looked up, it turned out the sun had gone out in the middle of the day. And then unmistakably, she heard the sound, a sound she knew so well, the sound of fabric ripping. It was coming from the Holy of Holies. The curtain, she knew it, the curtain that set apart the most holy place, God's dwelling, from the people themselves, it was being torn. One of her husband's old friends, an old priest, stumbled out with a piece of it in his hands, bewildered. Looking around, he saw her there and started asking her about her skills for mending. A big job, he said. A big fix, this tear, it went all the way through the ancient fabric, but she shook her head, no. If God's holy presence was on the loose, who was she to stop him? If God is everywhere, where can you go to find him? He had no idea. He had no idea what he was doing here, sitting in church, him of all people. How many times had he driven by this church and mocked it, mocked all of those people sitting there on Sundays, pretending to be holier than thou, dressed up and sitting in rows, when he knew he had just seen some of them in the bars on Saturday nights. And now, here he was, sitting in the middle of that same church between them all. Now, he had been here once, only once, years ago for a funeral. It was Ben's wife's funeral. Back then, Ben had been his neighbor for years already, this older couple living next door. And when his wife passed away, it was the least he could do, sitting through a church funeral for Ben's wife when she died after a long battle with cancer. But it didn't mean he liked it. He and his family had gone over to Ben's house, of course, to offer their condolences, to offer their support, to offer their casserole dish. But somehow, Ben always ended up comforting them. Ben was different. He even grieved differently, Ben did, not like other people, not like those who had no hope. He kept talking about seeing Carla again, about the strength their faith in God had given them. He didn't really get it when Ben talked that way. He didn't have any need to get it back then. That was before the accident, before everything changed, before he knew firsthand just what a monster grief could become and how it could tear everything apart. If you wanted to know, it was really guilt on top of grief. That was the truth of it. Guilt because he knew he was somehow to blame. He had given Robbie that bike, taught him to ride it, right there on that road in front of their house, holding onto the seat, running after him until he got his balance, so proud to be riding off. And then came the accident. If he just hadn't given Robbie that bike, he never would have been riding it there that day, never would have been in the path of that car. He was the dad. He was supposed to keep everybody safe. He was supposed to know how to fix everything, and now nothing would ever be fixed. Never again. After Robbie's death, he started to believe he had something like the opposite of the Midas touch. The one from that story where everything the guy touched turned to gold. Instead, it seemed like his touch just ruined everything. First his son, then his marriage, his job, now his life. It was like he was contagious with bad things, rubbing off on all the people around him, especially the ones he loved. He turned to alcohol to get him through the worst, but now alcohol had turned into a bigger monster, a master he had to serve every day. The day his wife left for good, he knew he had absolutely nothing left, nothing to ruin. He didn't know where to turn. He didn't know where he could go, who he could talk to. And then he remembered Ben, right next door. He remembered that somehow Ben's grief for his wife had not swallowed him whole for some reason. He knew that even Ben on his bad days, well, there was just something about him, something that made you feel like everything was going to be okay. He wanted to feel that again. His boy, Robbie, he had felt that way about Ben, too. He had gravitated to the old neighbor. His boy spent hours over at his house helping Ben to retool the engine of one of his old cars that he kept around. "That's what I need," he thought. "I need a complete overhaul. My engine is just rusted out. Maybe I should go talk to Ben." So he went. It took every last ounce of strength that he had. But he knocked on Ben's front door. And it turns out he was right. As he sat on Ben's couch and cried and talked and cried and talked until he thought he had no more tears left, it was both the worst conversation and the best conversation that he had had in a long, long time. And then just as he thought he was about to get up and start heading for home, Ben asked to pray for him, to talk to God with him, to ask God for help for him, the God he had been angry with for so long. He told Ben there was no way he was having anything to do with God. "Well, that might be a problem," Ben said, "because God is the reason I'm even sitting here talking to you today." Ben told him how he had hit rock bottom long ago, bottomed out on alcohol and emptiness and searching to put his life back together in ways he knew he never, ever could, and how he found himself at an AA meeting, and someone introduced him to God, and they had been close ever since. He wasn't sure how he felt about all this God stuff, but he listened to Ben explain how AA had been part of turning his life around. He found himself even agreeing to go with Ben the very next morning to a meeting. And that's how he ended up in this place, a church of all things, a place he never thought he would go. And how after several of those meetings, he actually found himself surprisingly saying yes when Ben asked if he'd go back on a Sunday, go to church with him, walking this time not into a back hallway, but right through the front door. Sitting in a sanctuary terrified him. He couldn't even listen to what the guy up front was saying anyway. He was so terrified that those words would somehow be about him, would call out sin and ugliness in his heart, how he had hurt others, especially those he loved the most. He was sure if these church people could just see who he really was, his contagious touch that tarnished everything instead of turning it to gold, they would not want anything to do with him. He sat anything but still, jiggling his knee up and down so violently that his pocket change made music, until Ben reached out gently next to him and put his hand down on the pew beside him. Not stopping him, not correcting him exactly, just showing him what stillness was. He let Ben's stillness become his stillness. Ben's peace become his peace. He had a sense that somehow what was good in Ben was more contagious than what was bad in him. He actually started to listen to the guy up front, this sermon. It was going on anyway. It was all about the church. That, he thought, he knew about exactly what a church was, until the pastor said he wasn't just talking about this particular church building. He wasn't talking about any building, for that matter, not just a church that was around a corner, but the church around the world, around time. He said back in Bible days, nobody had ever seen a church building before. So in order to explain what a church was, they had to use word pictures to show people. The pastor said that Jesus said the church was his body, and that kind of creeped him out. He wasn't so good with bodies. He also said a weirder one, that the church, Jesus said, was like his bride. He didn't know about that. He had never imagined himself as someone's bride before. But while he was still thinking of that, the pastor threw out one more picture. The church, he said, it's like a temple. Well, that made sense, right? He thought he knew about temples. Temples were those ancient old buildings, at least in the movies like Indiana Jones, places of worship long ago. But this particular temple, he had never heard of this one before. It was ancient. But it wasn't just one of many temples, many gods. It was one temple, one God. Turns out it's where people went to find God, went to meet with God, to get forgiven, to get healed, where something special called God's glory dwelled, where something beautiful and pure and good called holiness was there in God's presence. It was so much more contagious than anything else that people brought bad things in with them and left with the goodness of holiness instead. He thought, if that temple were around today, I would go there. I would get my engine overhauled. But the pastor was saying they didn't have to go anywhere because God had come to them. Jesus was God on the move, God's holiness on the loose, and that he had brought that holiness to them. So now the church was like a temple, the place that all those good things could live, not the church building, but the people who went to the building and then went out again and did the stuff, even the ones who weren't perfect, like him. In fact, the pastor said these letters in the Bible where the guy had called the church a temple, he was writing these letters to a weird place called Corinth. And the way the pastor described them, it was almost like reading the newspaper today. They were sure far from perfect. Just like all these people sitting around him, these weird church people. Turns out they didn't come to church because they were perfect after all, but because God was. To enter a temple was to encounter the presence of God. And now the presence of God, this God who was supposedly alive, was inside these weird people. Now maybe that peace, that stillness he had been drawn to and been all along, maybe that was holiness? A song started. And the pastor, before he finally sat down, invited anyone to come up to the front who wanted to meet with God. Sitting there, he wasn't even sure what that meant, to meet with God. But before he could think about it too much, his feet were moving, carrying him forward. Part of him was horrified, but he just couldn't stop himself. He knelt, almost fell at the altar during that beautiful song, and he cried again. And the words of the song washed over him as he cried some more. Holy, 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 the people sang. Holy, holy, holy. And that's when he felt a hand on his shoulder. He knew it was Ben. But then another hand on his back and another on his other shoulder. The weight of those hands, it wasn't the weight of a burden. It was more like the weight of something substantial, some kind of presence there with him. The weight that seemed to be both holding him down and holding him up at the same time. He opened his eyes to see that the last song had ended. Most of the room was empty, but a small group of people was still standing around him praying, and he decided to peek at their faces, and that's when he saw it. Not judgment, love, compassion, stillness, peace. Something glorious. Something like glory. He didn't even have a word for it, but he knew he had met with God. If God is everywhere, where can you even go to find him? Well, God is everywhere, right? But he also wanted to be somewhere. He wanted to be with his people. He wanted to be with her. He wanted to be with him, and he wants to be with us. And that's the best of all. God is with us.